Welcome to another edition of Irish Illustrated Insider, brought to you by IrishIllustrated.com. I'm Pete Sampson with Tim Priester and Tim O'Malley. We've got spring practice previews to talk about, NFL combine measurements. I don't know if you guys spent your weekend obsessing over hand reach and vertical jumps. But also basketball. Now that Notre Dame is officially in a bracket, we can lead the podcast with hoops. Tim, you were down in Louisville over the weekend, close out the regular season with a loss. Ultimately, Notre Dame ends up as a 3-seed double bye in the tournament. We'll play Thursday night, late game, 9 p.m. probably. And I guess, I mean, being around Bray and the players at Louisville, they had a chance to maybe get a share of the league. Didn't work out. What was sort of the vibe, I guess, around the program coming out of that to finish as well as they did, even in a loss? I would imagine had to be a mixed bag, but maybe more to the positive than the negative?
Yeah, definitely, because I think that they turned the page real quickly after that game. You know, they were shooting for their seventh in a row. They did it when they were 6-5. They did exactly what they needed to do. They won six games in a row and put themselves in a position to possibly tie for first place during the regular season. It didn't work out. I thought they played pretty good defense against Louisville, which is long and athletic and talented. But they just can't keep players off the board, and that ended up costing them a little bit. They missed some shooting opportunities, but you know, I think it's very positive now. They ended up, North Carolina beating Duke, and that gave them the number 3 seed. And I think they go into this feeling really good about themselves. They certainly feel really good about playing in the Barclays Center in Brooklyn. They've won 4 in a row there, 2 games in the NCAA tournament last year, and 2 games against Colorado and Northwestern in the Legends Classic in November. So it's upbeat. Number 3 seed, amazingly, Notre Dame is the only team in the ACC to get a double bye in each of the last 3 years. North Carolina was crazy. A 5 seed 2 yeah. years ago. Virginia's a 6 seed now. Duke's a 5 seed now. So they're the only team to get there 3 straight years. And it's really pretty incredible because when you match teams up man for man, they are not nearly as talented as a lot of these other teams. But Mike Bray continues to keep it rolling as they head in the ACC.
Yeah, I think in the short term, just looking at this particular tournament, they're just going to have to. They could have gotten out ahead of Louisville had they hit some of those open shots.
Right.
And then it happened earlier in the year against Virginia. They had open shots and they missed them. And then the second half, those aren't there. It becomes harder. You got to hit those. You got to kind of get the feeling, especially on the road where you get a little bit of momentum going. Thought it was interesting. You mentioned not being able to keep off the backboard at some point. They switched to zone, and I started keeping track when they went to zone. There was about 15 possessions, like 13 in a row, they went zone. Now, Louisville didn't score on all these, but I started tracking. First possession was a 3 for Louisville. The next 5 were second-chance opportunities. That's 6 possessions with either scoring or getting a 3. The next 2 were 3-pointers. Then they got to stop. And interestingly enough, they went away from it and kind of stole some possessions with zone at the very end. But it is a crapshoot if they're going to get the rebound against the zone. It's not even defending the 3. It's not boxing out well enough. It's athletes are running to the rim and they don't have any height there. And unless your man Martin Gebben is back in action, Tim.
Well, he played well.
He just played well.
He played well the last 2 games of the year. He played well against Boston College, and so that's a plus. It gives another man in the rotation. Another big body. If he would just play, I was talking to Matt Farrell about Gebben after the game, and I said, well, what is it that when you're in his ear about, about what he needs to do, and I couldn't even get the words out of my mouth, and he said confidence, because he said when they went to Italy, both of them went to Italy and played in August, that they both played well. But look, Gebben just needs to be active and reactive, and he had a slam, slam dunk on a rebound. He had a great pass. He took a charge. He had a couple of rebounds. That's all they need out of him. Just be active. But it's still going to come down to the big 4. TJ Gibbs playing solid basketball. Pfluger's not going to be a big scorer for him. But they're in position to do some damage. But look who's at the end of the rainbow here for Notre Dame. It looks like it'll be Virginia. Maybe Georgia Tech can get by NC State and knock off Virginia, but I don't think so. Pete, you're looking forward to that Georgia Tech-Virginia game?
Georgia Tech is like the bastard child of Virginia. I don't want to watch either of those games, and certainly not when they play each other. But, I mean, I guess you look at the draws you get in predictions for the tournament. I can't at first I look, oh God, Virginia, that's the worst possible draw. But then you're like, well, wait a minute, North Carolina, Duke, and Louisville are on the other side of the bracket, yeah. And they beat Florida State, almost beat them twice. Maybe this is actually the best possible
I think
draw.
It is. No, I think it is. And certainly, somehow, some way, Mike Bray, with his beautifully flowing offense that he normally has, it doesn't work that way against Virginia. He's got to come up with a way to have some success offensively. But this is not one of Tony Bennett's best teams. I would like a Notre Dame-Florida State matchup because that's a young Florida State team playing in the ACC tournament.
And it means they beat Virginia, so that'd be good.
Right, exactly. I think a dangerous team is actually, I think Virginia Tech could knock off Florida State.
But that's why this is a great bracket, because you look at the other side and you think Duke, Louisville, North Carolina, the only knockoff is Syracuse.
Right,
that's
not, you know, let them beat each other up. But I wouldn't be surprised if Notre Dame gets by Virginia. I wouldn't be surprised if they were playing Virginia Tech in the next game. Because I think that Buzz Williams can knock off Florida State.
I think the bottom of this bracket is so interesting because the semifinals could be Virginia Tech versus Virginia easily.
Right.
And that's up top. It's just a national power, no matter what.
Right.
You're going to have a national title contender up top, and at the bottom it's wide open.
Yeah. I just look at if Virginia loses to Georgia Tech, then I would like Notre Dame in the final.
Yeah.
If Virginia beats Georgia Tech, I like Notre Dame to lose on the first night because Bray's 0-5 against Tony Bennett.
They haven't
been
close.
Bad teams.
They're not.
They really haven't
been
close.
It's just a terrible, frustrating matchup for them. And I don't. It's like, I think there was some conversation on social media about, like, boy, I really think Notre Dame would love another shot at Virginia. I'm just like, no, they wouldn't.
No, because they don't have confidence. Where would they derive the confidence going against Virginia? Yeah. Other than, you know, Bray's ultimate confidence giver. But it has not. They have not. Seriously threatened to beat Virginia in five tries. And I was at that game in Denver in 2008 when Tony Bennett was coach of Washington State. Whoa. And Mike Bray's offense put up 41 points that day.
Yeah, they're better. They're not that program anymore. But no one wants Virginia. Remember we were saying I don't want to avoid Georgia Tech after that second close game against Georgia Tech? That's not the case. It's better to play Georgia Tech.
Yeah.
It's okay to play Georgia Tech in this tournament. You know, I
who
want
else
to stick
do you
with
think
it,
is a threat? I mean, I think the storyline with NC State, because Gottfried has been fired, is interesting.
What's the storyline with NC State?
They're not getting through to Duke will beat him, though.
He's been fired, and that usually sets the stage for a dramatic run, unfortunately. And they do have talent, but they're a poor basketball team.
Duke
they probably
will score
90
on them.
They probably don't get by Georgia Tech.
Yeah. I mean, overall, Notre Dame bracketology today, they're a 5 seed. I think that even if they lost to Virginia on Thursday night, I think they'll probably be a 5 seed. You know, if they get to the semis, maybe they move up to a 4. Unless they won the tournament,
the
I don't see how they could get a 3.
No, they have the team with Jaren Grant that had 5 losses and won the ACC championship got a 3.
Yeah, it's like Notre Dame's non-conference schedule is not, it's just not good enough.
I think 5 is they're worthy of a 5.
Yeah, so 4-5, you know, Tim, you'd be heading out to, you know, like nice places like Milwaukee or Orlando or Tulsa, you know, fun places like that for the first couple rounds of the tournament. Other news from the weekend, the NFL Combine happened. If you were on Twitter, you couldn't have avoided it. DeShone Kizer, surprisingly rough go. I think there was so much buzz about him interviewing well, and we all get that because we've interviewed him. But at some point, you have to give more than good quotes. You have to have a vertical jump and accuracy, and he sort of got torn apart a little bit by analysts, and it did not test particularly well either in terms of 40s and things of that nature behind Deshaun Watson and virtually everything, which I don't think is too much of a surprise, but also behind Mitchell Trubisky and virtually everything as well. So DeShone Kizer came into the weekend saying, I'm the best quarterback in the draft. I want to be taken early. I want to start in week one. And I think after the weekend, not to overreact to it, I think you come out thinking like, maybe you're the third best quarterback in the draft, and it would be good to sit for a year and learn from a more experienced quarterback.
Even if he's the best quarterback in the draft, he'll be much better off if he gets to sit, because he is not ready to start week one in the NFL.
Well,
they will chew him.
None of those guys are.
None of them are.
Yeah.
They would get chewed up. You cannot have DeShone Kizer's accuracy and game management right now starting and win, well, you could start and winning NFL games. It just wouldn't work. But Pete, I think you mentioned on the board, it doesn't mean he shouldn't have come out. He's coming out because he's going to get a great contract.
Yeah, I mean,
it just doesn't mean he's
going to
be good.
He's going to learn to play football, which is he could do that at Notre Dame for free, or he could do that in the NFL and get paid a few million dollars.
Wouldn't the NFL get paid a few million dollars?
And I'm not surprised. I don't know about you guys, but I mean, I'm not surprised at the accuracy issues at all.
And I don't understand why that's not a bigger storyline with him. Like, we all have talked about it, but for some reason that has not latched on among people who, I guess, know film better than we do. I mean, we watched every DeShone Kizer throw live, and he's just not that accurate of a quarterback. But for some reason, NFL scouts and, like, the Mayocks and Kuipers, you don't hear the accuracy issues
coming. Well, I think a lot of that is still based upon 2015 as opposed to 16 when he was less accurate. I've said since the beginning I see your expression. When you have Will Fuller running around out there for you, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm saying in 2015, I didn't think he was overly accurate either. I mean, how long
he broke?
It took a month before he could throw like a 5 yard out.
But then he was accurate though. Remember, he got so much better.
Then he just threw it deep to Will Fuller, and that's like a lot of the times when I see analysts post clips of DeShone Kizer. Look at this NFL throw. It's the throw to Equanimeous St. Brown against Syracuse, and I'm just like, that's it? I mean,
you mean the early crossing route where he...
No, the deep ball down the right sideline. And it's like, that's a great throw against Syracuse.
Yeah.
So I just don't really get that.
That was an awful secondary. What was the safety's name? That guy...
He had moments. Now, Will Fuller's attached to all these moments I'm about to bring up. As a, whatever it was, redshirt freshman, 15. He had moments as the year went on where there was some... The throw against Stanford that Fuller accelerated for a 74-yard touchdown. I mean, that was an NFL throw, getting the ball out there. I know he was wide open against Adoree Jackson. You wouldn't really count that one. He had some moments where he got hot at the end. And I do want to bring up the clutch issue, because clearly, if you define someone as clutch, he was not last year.
No.
But it's weird, because that's why everybody embraced him as a rookie, as a redshirt freshman. Obviously, Virginia was one play, but it was clutch. Couldn't be much more clutch than that. Yeah. He brought him back to beat Temple. He won the fourth quarter against USC. He brought him back to beat Stanford, and the defense gave up. And then he brought him back to what? I mean, he brought him back basically against Clemson. It's not his fault Steve Elmore got murdered on a two-point conversion call. He was the opposite guy in the fourth quarter. And I don't remember the exact stats, but I did break him down last year. In the fourth quarter, I think he was exactly 50%, 32 of 64. And in the rest of the game, he was over 60%. So there was an issue last year in the fourth quarter. Is it all on him? Probably not. That never is, right? It's never all on one guy. No. But if you're going to look at a guy that was clutch, you have to say he wasn't clutch last year, and I don't know why that was though.
Well, and he had the young receivers, so a lot of times when we're talking about accuracy, is it because he threw it in the wrong place or were they in the wrong place? You don't always know that. Even scouts looking at that don't know for sure.
I mean, the Navy game really comes to mind with that question where he missed Torrey Hunter in the end zone, where clearly he was throwing one route and Hunter was running another one. Ultimately, that cost them the game.
Well, and he had a deep ball to Stefferson. This is something Greg Gabriel has talked about where Stefferson broke stride. I mean, that's a sure touchdown, and Stefferson breaks stride on a deep ball.
That was the only time they got stopped in the game.
Yeah, but he'll have another shot at Pro Day, which won't be viewed with the same level of importance that the Combine was, because there's
everyone
just more at
well
stake. That right? Yeah, you're right, and he's got his own receivers.
Clawson was 48 of 50 in the Combine.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. So it's not nearly as important as the Combine was. As you pointed out, Pete, the loss of weight. I mean, I don't know how much weight he lost, but physically he looked better, which makes it a little bit surprising that he didn't test better.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, you just look at him in the face. He looks like he lost 10 pounds of baby fat.
At least.
Skim milk from whole milk, probably.
I guess. Hey. One thing, I want to read this quote from Kizer at the Combine and get your reaction to it. This is him asked about the two quarterback system last year and his development and its impact on the year. And the quote is, "I don't think it held me back, but I do think I spent a little too much time thinking about that rather than thinking about developing the guys around me and developing the trust. Once again, the 2015 and 2016 team were completely different. We had almost a completely different roster on offense. I think there should have been a little bit more time spent with me trying to develop that trust and develop the guys around me to make plays in the fourth quarter drives that we needed At times, I was looking over my shoulder a little bit too much. That's probably my biggest regret this past season.
Well, when I read that quote, I said, yeah, that's exactly what you did. You were too... He spent too much time being concerned about that. He got pissed off when it, you know, when it happened. And I, you expect.
And at the time, we were like, well, that's a good thing. Of course, they would be.
Well, but you expect, Zaire to react that way, but you, I didn't necessarily expect Kaiser to react that way. I can understand where he's coming from because it shouldn't have been a two quarterback system. It shouldn't have been.
Right. Oh, I mean, we have all the ancillary evidence we need, right? Right. They were for it. I mean, there was a train wreck. There's got to be a reason DeShone Kizer was that much worse. He was, I mean, what did you think of DeShone Kizer coming into last year? Outstanding new quarterback, two more years.
No, clutch. I thought one more year.
I thought he'd get out too.
No, I knew he was, I mean, we knew.
Well, if he
we were told he was good. Yeah. Yeah. But
I thought,
that year,
I thought he would take a big step forward and then leave. He just sort of was the same and then left. That was confusing to me. But it's it's clear in hindsight, the system, you end up getting a worse product from both guys.
Yeah, since we're using hindsight, when do you think with a good player like Malik Zaire as your backup, a guy that obviously had a lot of support in the locker room, when do you think that decision had to be made, ideally? The beginning of August training camp? Because you can't do the spring because Zaire wasn't fully healthy, right? You got to give Zaire something in training camp if you think he has a chance.
Come back from Culver.
Okay.
Make the decision. I pick the guy. That's what I would say.
Yeah. All right, we're focusing all on one guy, but Isaac Rochelle showed himself well at the combine. Jerron Jones has a great wingspan, but that was about the extent of what was positive about his experience at the combine.
Yeah, I mean, the testing, Isaac Rochelle was middle of the road pretty much in everything, which I think is fairly predictable. You know, it's like, and he was up front about, look, I know everybody wants a pass rush.
I
had 4.5 sacks. I've had a hard time letting that loose, but I think he made a good point in terms of selling himself of like, well, I started in a 3-4, I started in a 4-3. I played end. I played, defensive tackle. So the versatility, he could be a guy that takes up two roster spots for one next year in the pros. I think that
which he did for the last, two.
Yeah, basically
two years,
he did
certainly.
That here.
Yeah,
right. He did that here, where there was no reason for it. But bench, he was above average, 25 reps, 40. He was slightly below at 4.89, and vertical jump above average at 31.5. Jerron Jones.
He jumped 11 more inches
than Jerron Jones, right. Jerron Jones really was poor. Bench press, 22 reps, was 30th among defensive linemen. 5.33 in the 40, which is 49th out of 51. And then dead last in the vertical jump at 20.5 inches, which was 51st. And that was 4 inches off the next guy, which is a lack of physical strength and a lack of explosive ability. It was just a poor showing for him. There's no way around it. So I don't know where that leaves him.
You surprised?
That he was that far off?
That he was that far off?
Yeah. Is he an explosive athlete? Against Miami, yes. Would harness some of that. Have the bench press bar be, sort of Miami colors or something. It's like, put it together, Jerron. I thought that he would do better than that, but am I surprised he wasn't that explosive in the vertical jump? No. But the other stuff, I thought he would have a better weekend than that.
This segment is stretching on. Do you want to start spring practice in the next
about
segment?
Current defensive tackles that don't try all the time as opposed to the former ones. We'll go from there.
Why don't we end this segment, start segment two, talking spring practice, and we'll go into the questions. I think all the questions deal with spring football. Segment two of Irish Illustrated Insider, talking about spring practice. We're thankful that this is the last preview of spring practice with nothing to work on other than depth charts that we've been pouring over for the last 6 weeks. But what are you guys looking forward to? Brian Kelly will meet with the media Tuesday, and then the first of 15 spring practices on Wednesday.
The rover position, I really want to see what happens there.
Everything on defense is...
I want to hear what Mike Elko, the coach, is like. You know, what's the vibe there? And then I don't think we'll see. I mean, the 11-on-11 stuff is not going to happen for a while. But I just want to see how like Brandon Wimbush handles a room, kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, does he have some all that the it factor type stuff that you feel like he does because everyone in the program keeps telling you that he has it. I can tell you that one, a former Notre Dame coach is just continues to get on the table for this guy, saying that he will be better than Deshaun or Malik or anybody that they've had. They absolutely love Brandon Wimbush and think he's going to be a complete star. So let's see it. Starting Wednesday morning.
He just, better be Wednesday morning, too. Yeah. Otherwise, we're writing him off forever.
Exactly. That so much is on the line Wednesday morning.
I want to see if the corners, the four guys, because I'm not including Crawford yet, are as good as I think they can be. Because you've never really looked at Notre Dame and thought, boy, look at all these young corners. They have so many. I said this before, but we could just all pick their starting corners and nickel, and all of us could be wrong going into the season. That's how good I think they could be. I want to see them. And the spring for me is about being able to watch corners versus receivers, because that it's hard to, you know, they're not the lines shuffling. We don't get a lot of look at the offensive and defensive lines because we're 110 yards away most of the time in the spring. Yeah. I mean, just our proximity compared to August, it is different. So I always have fun watching to see the corners develop.
Won't Harry Heastand called dibs on being 110 yards away from the media?
You can hear him, though. Yeah. It's good. Yeah. they have 6 corners, by the way, Notre Dame, that have started a football game.
Wow.
Isn't that weird?
There's a lot of potential there. You know, you talk about Wimbush, and I understand that feeling that this guy's going to be better than all of them because just physical skills, yeah, athleticism, speed, that, you know, that free and easy throwing motion, you can understand why someone would come to that conclusion with him.
Plus, if you lose games, you're always happy about the new quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, that's just the nature of the game. But for me, I mean, anything that happens on defense is going to be exciting, right? Because you want to...
if defense occurs, that's exciting.
No, I didn't mean it that way. I meant, although you can certainly apply it that way.
It's like the available.
Yeah, you know, Mike Elko, how everybody's going to be aligned. We're still guessing about who lines up where on the defensive line, even to a large extent at linebacker as well. But all of that's exciting. Who are the pass rushers? I don't think that it's as great of a concern as it has been in the past, because Elko creates pass rush through scheme. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't think that Andrew Trumbetti is suddenly going to become a much better pass rusher, but he can become a better pass rusher statistically based upon the scheme. And then, to me, the back end, probably the most fascinating is the back end, because you've got nothing but young guys back there, but Stud Still and Elliott are talented athletes, and I want to see how good they are on the back end of the defense.
We could be totally wrong, starting with a spring prediction and an August camp prediction about who starts at both safety spots, too. That's how, I mean, I think that, I know, Pete, you're high on Isaiah Robertson, too, part of it because he's an early enrollee. I don't think he's going to start over those guys, but why is he that far behind those guys? It's a new defense. He can go in and make plays, right?
You know, Isaiah Robertson has had exactly the same number of spring practice reps as Jalen Elliott.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, but not the same game reps.
No,
I mean, just
but it's not like they've nailed down these spots.
Yeah. No, absolutely not.
For 3 years or anything like that.
It's like he's just not that far behind. Like, there should not be a situation like the Studsill Redfield last year where an early enrollee and comes in and pushes a senior. I mean, that's ridiculous. But of all the early enrollees, Isaiah Robertson is the most intriguing based on opportunity. Brock Wright is the best based on talent. And I guess that sort of gets to another thing. I really want to see how Chip Long uses the two tight ends. If Chip Long is affecting Notre Dame's offense, then we'll see a ton of two tight ends. If he's calling plays from Brian Kelly's playbook, then we won't. I think that's interesting. And then just a couple personnel guys. I want to see, okay, where does Jay Hayes line up? Is he inside, outside? What kind of shape is he in? Dexter Williams, his career's half over. We've been talking about how much potential he's had since he showed up.
I'm not allowed to talk about
it. And then Alize Jones, obviously. Where does he line up? How much work does he get? How fresh does he look? That's a guy that I think has a chance to really move the needle for Notre Dame offensively this year.
I think Pete's trying not to say Claypool's name, so I am interested in seeing where Claypool lines up. I want to see who he's competing with. It's, I mean, he's a guy that you would figure Now a year into the program, every time you saw him out there, he flashed. Whether it was running down the field on special teams, we know he'll be there. Brian Polian's already talked about Chase Claypool. It's Chase Claypool, Nico Fertitta, and who else for his core special teams guys. But you want to see where Claypool can help the offense. But that's kind of why I find the secondary, by comparison, so interesting. Equanimeous St. Brown's not losing his job. You know, we can tell you who's going to be starting at some of these. Kevin Stefferson, in all likelihood, is going to start a wide receiver for Notre Dame from his on-the-field productivity. Secondary, there's movement. There's going to be movement.
Yeah, well, and along that same theme, I mean, you know four of the offensive linemen they're going to start. Alex Bars could move into guard, but this is why I say everything on defense is exciting. Like the defensive line, Dalen Hayes. You know what? How does Jonathan Bonner fit? I mean, really, based upon last year's depth chart, he's in line for a starting spot. Really? Will they really go in that direction? I mean, I'm not sure, and that's why when you say, Pete, you're interested to see where Jay Hayes fits, I'm really interested to see where Jay Hayes fits, because he's been a tackle, he's been an end. How does it all work out in the Elko defense? And then, I mean, even if you look at linebacker, and we've been speculating about Tranquil, and I assume that is true, that he's going to be the rover, but how do they use Bilal? How do they use Martini? I think really the only certainty there is Niles Morgan and Mike linebacker.
Sure, and I think, you know, you talk about the defensive line. Jerry Tillery has to have a really good year for Notre Dame, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Everybody else is the solid talent level guys that can step up a level. You know, can't he take more than just a minimal jump?
Okay, so on a scale of 1 to 10, what's your confidence level that he's going to take that jump up?
Two. I don't have a giant confidence level for it. I'm saying he has the ability to do it, though. Well, Daniel Cage is probably the best guy, and he's just solid.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, it's like this was something that Rochelle was asked about at the combine. It's like, okay, the defensive line next year, what kind of group do you feel like they have coming back? And Rochelle started with Tillery, which, okay, makes sense. A good place to start. And then he said, you know, it's like, I think Andrew Trombetti has a chance to take a step forward. I'm like, okay.
You thought you were talking to me at the time?
Yeah. and then Brandon Tiasem isn't a young guy anymore. Oh, so maybe, geez. And you're just like, whoa. Is that Notre Dame just doesn't have a lot of material on the defensive line right now. And I can understand why Rochelle would not list a freshman.
Right.
Because he probably doesn't know them that well. But it really highlights the fact that unless Notre Dame gets Dalen Hayes, Julian Okwara, Khalid Kareem, unless those guys, the light goes on, probably for all three of them, two at a minimum, the defensive line is going to be a fairly pedestrian group, and it's hard to play good defense with a pedestrian defensive line.
Well, I think the biggest wild card there is Kareem. That was a guy that we all had a pretty high level of confidence that he would become a player as he was coming into Notre Dame. He got a brief look last year, known for a late hit. That's about all he did in his freshman year. But I mean, I think that's a guy with a lot of potential, and I'm really interested to see what he does this spring.
At least they burned a year of eligibility for a late hit and four wins.
Yeah, that's...
We would be remiss in saying, though, when I said Tillery's the guy that could do a level jump, Dalen Hayes could do a level jump. He could.
And yeah, I'll put Tillery at a four in terms of, right, of confidence because, and you know, I've been very critical of him in the past, but what you said was, he has the ability to do it, so that'll raise my confidence level to four going in.
Right.
Actually, let's take one question before we get in. And just like the guy buried on the depth chart is a Twitter thing that you think could make a jump from like way off the radar to a serious contributor this year.
So Claypool will be cheating. He's because we all like his talent. But that's not that would be a serious contributor from way off the depth chart, huh? He's got to be on defense. Because an offensive lineman's not, we all assume it's Kramer Eichenberg being the fifth guy. Yeah. Either one doesn't surprise you. Mm-hmm. I think there's so many offensive guys that no one's coming up and taking over for the starting top two tiers.
You have somebody.
I'm curious about like Tony Jones, honestly, as a back who can catch the ball in the backfield. If that's where Notre Dame's offense wants to go, I think that he would be an interesting guy.
He's the number two guy then?
Yeah. I mean, I think just by definition, any early enrollee is buried on the depth chart at this time. And it would not shock me if Brock Wright jumped up a couple levels out of the gate. But I mean, there's not, I don't know if this is a team loaded with off the radar candidates.
I think mine's Robertson.
So many young guys played.
The guy we talked, Isaiah Robertson's my guy because I don't. It's not that I don't like the safeties; it's just they haven't proven anything either. So I think Isaiah Robertson. I like this film, and I like this film more than I like Studstill and Elliott's film. That's the best way to say it. Yeah. Now they've put some time in, of course, but Robertson's mine.
You know, any pass rusher, anybody that shows
for Aquara. I mean, Aquara.
At this point, I have no idea where Ogundeji is, but that's a guy that, I mean, if you think about his high school film and his ability to come off the edge, maybe that's a guy that just because out of sheer athletic ability and need an opportunity might be able to come off the edge. Now, maybe you know a little bit more about
where
he is in his development.
I don't. I mean, and that's why I think Dalen Hayes or Julian Aquara.
Much more likely.
They've got something good has to happen there. So, all right. Well, that's it for segment two. We've got a ton of questions in segment three. We'll talk a little bit Scott Pagano, a little bit scheduling, a little bit more about Notre Dame's offense in general. So we'll get into all that next, our final segment of Irish Illustrated Insider.
Welcome back to segment three of Irish Illustrated Insider, our burning up the boards portion from SR 5452. Looking ahead to next football season, which games intrigue you the most? Also, what game is the measuring stick for you on how much this new staff has improved or how far ND still needs to go?
I mean, Georgia. Georgia's the answer to both of them. I mean, that's the season hinges on that because you're going to be Temple. There's going to be some good vibes around the program. It's going to be a big game against Georgia. It's at night. It'll be hyped up. You need to have at least 2 weeks of the season where you feel like everything is good and you have a chance to at least be in a conversation about the playoff. Just make it through September and have that be a viable conversation. So to me, everything hinges on Georgia. Is it going to be season defining? Maybe. Is it going to be a big recruiting weekend? Yes. But most importantly, you got to just give the people hope for at least a couple weeks.
Since Matt Rhule has gone from Temple, yes, I concur that I have a lot of confidence he'll beat Temple. But yeah, I don't know how you can. Georgia's a game for me too. Notre Dame's never played Georgia. It'll be even more interesting the following year when Notre Dame goes out there. But you know, Kirby Smart, they struggled a little bit in his first year, but I expect he had a good recruiting year, right?
They did.
And I expect them, and they're talented. Georgia's talented, so I expect them to be a much better product this year. Georgia is the game that I'm pointing to early on to see just how good Notre Dame is and just how good Georgia is.
And I think it would be even if Notre Dame was good last year. Georgia would still be the most intriguing game. They don't travel north of Knoxville, basically, ever. Georgia, they don't leave the South
for
road games. So this is, they're going to invade. There's going to be a lot of people coming from Athens to South Bend, too. It's going to be one of those scenes that this is a game. Yeah. I mean, that's going to be fun. It's going to be fun atmosphere. And I think, Pete, as you said, you got to be 2-0 because of, if you're 10-2 last year and you start 1-1, you still think about, let's see if we can run the table, right? But if you're 1-1 after last year, you're going into two road games, you're worried about being 2-2 in September, and then what's the point at this point, right? Life has no meaning.
The next most interesting game is any road game.
Any road game, yeah. It's true. They did win a road game last year. They went 3-2 on their remarkable 10-3 season or whatever that was called recently. They win a road game the year before. They don't win road games. They're 4-10 in the last 14 road games, and they have 5 of them this year. And they are all Power 5 teams, unless I'm crazy. Yeah, they're all Power 5 teams. So the road is the most intriguing thing for me because Notre Dame was 4-8. September is just the litmus test for me. You can't be 2-2 after being 4-8. You got to be 3-1.
You have to have one or zero losses
by the time
you hit the midseason game against USC.
That's a good call.
USC,
you can have one, though, by that point.
You can have one is fine, but and then you have to win that game.
The rest of them. The rest
is for all time. To me, pretty much everything hangs on Georgia. So no pressure, just game two.
And speaking of schedules, Notre Dame just released, the kickoff times for 2017. We have the night games against Georgia and USC at home, and the 5:00 kickoff for Miami of Ohio, and then the 2018-2019 schedules, opening with Michigan in 2018 at Notre Dame Stadium. That's going to be fascinating.
That schedule is quite interesting because it's like, okay, if you can get by Michigan, which is a big if you can get by, then you got Ball State, Vanderbilt, and Wake Forest before the Stanford game. You had a chance to do some damage there. Yeah. And certainly beating Michigan in the opener is that is the national story anywhere in college football. So that, to me, it's a really interesting schedule. Other notes on there, the fact that Florida State comes to South Bend in November, I think that's notable. And then somehow the Big Ten was able to carve out room for Notre Dame, not in the month of September, where they play at Northwestern in November in 2018, and then at Michigan, I think that's a late October game in 2019. I was always told that the Big Ten couldn't break away from the tradition of its conference schedule outside of September, interesting to me.
What are you suggesting?
That the Big Ten was full of crap.
It's a top-heavy schedule, man. You have Michigan, Stanford, Florida State, and USC on the schedule, and three of them at home. That's worth your home ticket price. I'm not saying Duke wasn't, but, you know, Michigan, Stanford, and Florida State on a hope schedule. That's pretty nice.
Well, O'Malley, on your topic of road games, 2019, at Louisville, at Georgia, at Michigan, at Duke,
yeah, you might
at Stanford.
You might want to win in 2018.
Wow. In 2018 at Virginia Tech, where Notre Dame has never been, which is I hope that is a night game. You won't hear me say that very often, right. But I hope that's a night game because Blacksburg looks like a really, really unique place to see a football game.
I would love to see that. You could even move to Thursday for me. That'd be so intriguing. I want to see a night game at Virginia Tech. You know, 2019, Tim, it's a long ways away, but it could be the return of Mr. Davey.
Of Bob Davey. Notre Dame Stadium. Yeah. In fact, that's when I saw that, that prompted me to, I'm going to get a hold of Coach Davey here coming up soon just to visit with him and catch up with him and see what he thinks about the possibilities of still being the New Mexico coach three seasons from now.
this is a nice little run in 2019. There is a bye week in there, but USC at Michigan, USC at Michigan, Virginia Tech.
Yeah.
That's some football.
Yeah, the fact that USC and at Michigan are consecutive games is fairly ridiculous. But it's going to be a fun schedule. Some good trips in there. It's a little imbalanced, I think, in terms of the home schedule in 19 is weird. New Mexico, yeah. Virginia, Bowling Green, USC, Virginia Tech, Navy, and Boston College.
Nothing compared to 18. I mean, 18's great. 19's bad for attending games.
19 is that is a real tough one. But hey, you'll have a fifth-year senior, Brandon Wimbush, starting. So no problems there.
That's bad news if you have fifth-year senior Brandon Wimbush starting, actually.
A question from Irish Bob. Last year's team had an identity crisis, so who will define the identity of this year's team, and what will it be?
I'll tell you what. It could be Brian Kelly. I think that would be bad because it has to be a player or players for Notre Dame to really hit at a high level. So the guys, I think in an ideal world, who were the guys that dragged Notre Dame over the finish line this year, if we're talking about this in December, and Notre Dame won 10 games, the guys that we're going to be listing are Quentin Nelson and Niles Morgan, to me. Those are the guys that have to pick up Notre Dame and just drag them forward whether they want to or not. I think that Quentin Nelson naturally wired that way. Niles Morgan, maybe. I think if Niles Morgan could go to a leadership workshop with Joe Schmidt for a week and come back and pick up some things that worked for Schmidt but would then work for Morgan, I think Niles Morgan has a huge responsibility on this team from a leadership perspective, and I'll be very curious to see how he handles that.
Where does McGlinchey fit in? You're obviously putting him in a different classification.
I mean, I think he's there. He's and does a good job of it, but yeah. I think that Nelson has a sort of a dog mentality that McGlinchey does not. I'm not saying McGlinchey is like a bad leader or anything.
I agree, but is Nelson the voice that will rally players? I'm not saying he's not.
I think he could. I would like to see Quentin Nelson cut loose, maybe not as a rah-rah verbally guy, but somebody that knows everyone's watching him, because everyone's going to be watching him next year, and speaks up enough that he can lead in kind of like a Nick Martin kind of way, or maybe even a Zach Martin kind of way. I don't think Quentin Nelson doesn't take any crap. And I think that they need more guys like that on the roster.
You know, I don't think I would add McGlinchey to it though, like Tim said, because I think McGlinchey struggled with not playing well last year. Because in August he was a leader for us, and then he just didn't have a very good year. He was fine. There's nothing wrong with him. Yeah. But I mean, well, there was some. He was a little bit bad before the snap sometimes, but it was he just did not play up to our expectations. Anyone's expectations, his own, Brian Kelly's, he stands. So I think if he can be the player we thought he'd be last year, he could join those guys.
Look, he's a critical part of the whole thing. I'm just saying, like, who are the new voices in there? Like, okay, you're replacing the voice of Torrey Hunter with the voice and presence of Quentin Nelson. I mean, that's
that's a pretty soft spot.
That's a 180 situation. You know, defensively, I really like Anawalu and Rochelle. I think Niles Morgan can bring us something extra to that that was lacking last year. And it's like, I think Drew Tranquil is going to be part of that.
Definitely.
In a Joe Schmidt kind of way. I think Niles Morgan is somebody who could relate to everyone on the roster if he really, you know, is conscious of being a leader in that way.
And Brian Kelly has said more than once, and actually Van Gorder said it, he is our toughest player.
Yes.
Niles Morgan. This was when he was a sophomore. He is our toughest player. By a wide margin. And that's what you need, about 50 guys to follow that
lead. Best teams, the captains are the best players. Next year might be one of those times. If you look at the Nelson, McGlinchey, Morgan group.
Yeah. Webster, of course, too. Right?
Yeah, Austin Webster.
And Martini's a captain, too. And I think Martini is a well-respected player. I don't know how vocal he is necessarily, but I think guys look at him and really respect who he is and what his capabilities are. So everybody leads in a different way, and you need the outspoken ones too. But I agree with you. I think Niles Morgan, that's a tone setter there. That's an absolute tone setter on the defensive side of the ball.
This is a fun exercise. We should just every once in a while throw in name Notre Dame's six captains, so you have to do it off the top of your head. It's not that easy to do like it usually is.
Well, I'm sure we're gonna be rolling, recording one of these times, and I can guarantee you I'm not going to be able to name all six in a row.
Yeah. Next up, Washington D. Outside of Brandon Wimbush on offense, the play of what player on each side of the ball will be most important to Notre Dame's success in 2017?
Oh, geez. Tillery and Cage. I'm going to start right there because that's the middle of your defense. And if we do not see the best of Jerry Tillery and Daniel Cage, it starts there for me in the middle, and it works its way out.
Tillery for sure for me, because I think Cage is just a solid, good nose tackle. I said I like Cage a lot. I just think Cage would be a guy everybody likes a lot if he had another Daniel Cage next to him playing, like he could platoon with himself.
Yes,
you need two guys that are solid. You know, you can't just have solid and drop off to, I have no idea if the guy coming in for me can play when you're solid. Mm-hmm. So I think Tillery because of the upside. I mean, Morgan's a great call. I fully expect Morgan to have a very good year, but I guess I'm thinking if Tillery and Cage are solid all year long, Morgan could have a great year.
I would say Dalen Hayes for obvious pass rush concerns. And I do think, as I said in the previous segment, I think Alize Jones is a guy that can move the needle with what Notre Dame is offensively, because he's just that versatile, and he'll be a matchup problem.
On the offensive side of the ball, I look at Mustafa and Bars. Yeah. Okay, now they have to play like veterans, regardless which spot Bars is taking. They're not young players anymore. They're both seniors with 2 years of eligibility. We fully expect McGlinchey and Nelson to be really, really good this year. We said that last year. Some growing pains there, maybe, you know, certainly for McGlinchey, but because he was moving to a different position. Mustafa and Bars need to hit the ground running. If you put those four together with an Eichenberg or a Kramer or a Hodge, it should be a better, more cohesive line than last year.
Then I guess one of the first guy I thought of automatically becomes good, Josh Adams. If you have four offensive linemen, you're relying on them playing well, Josh Adams will be much. I mean, you know, look, he had an end of the year. He had a really good end of the year, both Virginia Tech and USC. But he had a disappointing season somewhere in between Texas and Virginia Tech. It was not the year you thought from Josh Adams. He scored one touchdown the first seven games. Is that right? That's crazy to think of. And he looked great against Texas to start the year.
So. He had a bad hamstring combined with no Ronnie Stanley and no Nick Martin.
Right.
Yeah. So I think next year's line could look a lot more like the 2015 line. Yes. If that's the case, Josh Adams is going to average 7.2 yards per carry in most games. Next up, fresh 16-19. With the staff and conditioning changes, have not heard any recruiting profile like big skill, and power as much anymore. Is this still how the staff recruits body types, or are they using a different approach to evaluate profiles?
You know, you don't hear it because they decided it was too confusing. I asked Notre Dame about it in 2000. Right? Yeah. I asked him about it. I asked Brian Kelly about it, and he said no one understood what I was saying, so we just stopped using the terms. That was in an interview last year. They just don't use the terms are confusing. They still do recruit.
They don't use it publicly. Publicly, or privately?
They still use it privately. Okay. They all know what it means, but they don't use it publicly because everybody's like, "What does that mean?"
I mean, I think that is basically how any football team is comprised, right?
Yeah.
It's just that those were his phrases. We're not accustomed to them.
Just when I really got used to it too, he's like, "Yeah, we don't use them anymore." So they don't use them anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that. They're still recruiting. Everybody's still recruiting big skill, and power. They just don't call it the same thing.
If you're in his room, if you're in their rooms, you'd hear it. But it's just not a thing. Like, they just stopped on signing day. I think it was before 15. It might have been 14 even, and I didn't get a one-on-one with Kelly to ask him after that year. I mentioned it, and the bill it's used is just not the verbiage that goes to the public. Because it doesn't make any sense to most people reading it that come to tune in to Notre Dame. We're talking about it. This is our eighth big skill guy. This is our eighth skill guy. We don't have to define it anymore in every article. That's good.
It's hard enough to know where everybody is on a depth chart, let alone breaking it down by a different classification.
But clearly, I mean, there are some profile sort of takes with the defensive line. They want a little bit more length there. The Rover position, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, that's obvious. And then even...
Big skill, Rover?
Yeah.
See, it's tough. It's tough.
But even like cornerback, when, you know, they're more boundary and corner.
Yes.
So they're looking for particular guys to play on the boundary and particular guys to play in the field.
Same with the safeties, too.
Yeah. So it's...
Stud and a whip.
But I think ultimately at the end, it's like...
I just wanted to say that.
What do you want? I want the biggest possible, longest possible guys who can run the fastest. That's my profile. And that's what every team wants.
I'm going to confuse everybody in these press conferences. I'm using all Diaco phraseology when I ask questions from now on.
Yes,
so the dog, is it more... Well, who would play dog in this situation? It is interesting that... The one problem I have with recruiting to... It's not a problem because I'm not a coach, but... You need... When you're recruiting to type, recruiting boundary field and everything like that, it means you better be there for a while. Right?
Right.
So... I know, I think Mike Elko will be here for a while to recruit to his position, but like I thought about this when Van Gorder was here, because I always thought Van Gorder would leave after 2 years, after the 15 team, for a new job, not that he'd get fired or anything like that. When he started, I thought he's a nomad.
2 year prior.
He'll be here 2 years. So I was always uncomfortable with recruiting to his specific profile, because then you're leaving a program with the profile that might not be what they want anymore.
Right.
Now, I do think Elko, as long as Notre Dame has success, is in here for the long term with Notre Dame. So you can recruit to that. But it's dangerous, because if he's just the best defensive coordinator in the country and he gets a head coaching job, then you have his leftover...
Yeah, I think that sort of gets back to the everyone's looking for...
Good players.
Good athletes who have long arms and can run fast. Like, like the field and the boundary, whether Mike Elko is here or not, will still exist.
It will.
Those hash marks are not going away.
They should. They're too wide.
But I do, you know, I do think, like, with Diaco, that was something. Like, that was a thing, because the only defensive ends they wanted were 6'5", 270 pounds. That's not really going to work in every defense. Now, athletic cornerbacks who can run and jump and have, you know, two legs and two arms, like, that kind of works across the board.
Yeah, would you rather have a 6'3.5" Greer Martini or a 5'11" Jonathan Jones? I mean, you're always going to choose the...
Yeah, well, I think that was one of the things with linebacker last cycle. You saw Antoine Simmons,
yes,
the kid that signed with Michigan State, and Ellis Brooks, who I think ended up at Penn State, were 5'11" linebackers, and Mike Elko was like, I know these guys are 4-star prospects, but that isn't really what I'm looking for my defense to work.
Quick segue with that, since you mentioned that, Malik Van.
Yeah, I mean, that'd be another example.
Yeah. I mean, a guy that probably measured more like 6'1.5" than 6'3" when he came to visit. It's my understanding, I think you had mentioned, you know, if he's 285, it's my understanding they felt he topped out at 250.
That could be. I mean, he is somebody that you look at his body type and you're like, where's the room to grow there?
Right. And he's a strong side defensive end, and if he can't grow...
Yeah.
I just like... flexibility there. Van Gorder would have taken him. There was no doubt about it. Elko, I mean, I'm impressed by that. Elko's a little bit more discriminating. It may... You know, we're going to make this decision. It may be criticized on the outside, but this is the decision that we have to make.
Yeah, there's no question. And, I mean, on the recruiting talk, we had a bunch of questions about Scott Pagano and how that went because he moved up his visit a couple weeks, I think mostly to accommodate Clemson's spring break, his own, and was here last weekend talking to sources around Notre Dame. They felt like they're legitimately in it. They're also concerned about Oklahoma. They feel like that's a real threat, but... I mean, as we said on the last podcast, this is a guy that would change my outlook of next year's defense in a big, big way because on your Daniel Cage and Daniel Cage defensive alignment, then you don't need to do that because you have Scott Pagano instead. He would be one of your top two interior defensive linemen. He might be your best interior defensive lineman, and certainly I think that some of the I don't know how good of a much of a leadership role you would have as a grad transfer, but he's been around winning, and he knows what that looks like. That can't help but be a positive.
Cody Riggs had one, but he was a natural. He just, right when you talked to him, you knew he was going to have a leadership role in that secondary. Right when he came on, I know they tailed off at the end of that year, but he was hurt. He was a natural leader when he came in, so it is possible to do it.
Even if it's just a situation where Scott Pagano ends up at Notre Dame and he sets the example for Myron Tagovailoa, Mosa, and Heinisch, and Wardlow, some of the younger defensive linemen who, the fact that you're a grad transfer is completely irrelevant because, well, you were here when I got here, so, you played at Clemson. That could be a positive impact, too. It may not have anything to do with Jerry Tillery or Daniel Cage, but certainly can trickle down to the roster.
Actually, I was just going to say, I think it would be a positive with Jerry Tillery. I mean, I think just his mere presence would make Jerry Tillery better. I mean, he's lining up next to a guy that just played for that just won a play for a national title two straight years. Yeah. I realize not necessarily in a lead role, but I'm hoping because I think that makes him a much better defensive line. We talked about where do we start? The middle of the defensive line. Stick Pagano there. I think Notre Dame's a much better defensive line.
This is a question 3 weeks ago, probably on the board. Who's your number one recruit for next year? And Pete, you said Pagano for 1 year because if it doesn't work this year, it's getting blown up.
Yeah.
So he's more so than a guy that would be coming for 4 years because he enables three more years of the current regime.
There's no question that would be a huge, huge get for Notre Dame. It would just change the outlook of the whole defense. I think you look at the program differently, which is maybe putting a little bit too much on a grad transfer, but just based on the nature of the position and where he played and how good he is, I think that would be justified. Well, I think that's it for our podcast today.
That is.
All right, we're going to be back on March 9th, Thursday. Between then and now, we'll have Brian Kelly availability tomorrow on March 7th, and then the first spring practice the Monday of March 8th. And then if you survived watching Georgia Tech, Virginia, you can tune into that podcast and we can preview Notre Dame's opponent that night, Thursday, March 9th. The Priester will be out in Brooklyn for that one. So until then, March 9th. You've been listening to another edition of Irish Illustrated Insider, brought to you by IrishIllustrated.com. I'm Pete Sampson, joined as always by Tim Priester and Tim O'Leary. Thanks for listening.